Hello and welcome to the Tell It Slant podcast. I'm Eric Anderson. Thank you for joining us today. You are listening to episode 8, Stories and Describing Glory, in which Eric and Daniel Hintz discuss stories, their origins, and their purpose for us today. You can check out our podcast at ericbanderson.com, or you can find us on iTunes. Make sure that you check out Daniel's podcast, and you can find that at ascribepodcast.wordpress.com. A special thanks to Jesse Crawford for mixing and mastering our episode. Thanks for tuning in this week. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get growing. Take it easy. There's no need to scream and share. As far as I can see, my head. Think it's time for you to be with me.
Well, hello, listeners of Tell It Slant podcast. My name is Daniel Hintz. I am not going to be known from anywhere in particular, at least at the time of this recording. Hoping to get my own kind of podcast started here in the next few weeks. But my name is Daniel Hintz. I am a writer, a thinker, a debater, a lover of all things story and narrative. And that is why I'm here on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. So we're going to be talking about stories, and we're just going to kind of see how this conversation goes. And hopefully, at least my goal, is that this will be a regular occurrence where we'll have you on several times to just talk about different things. So I'm going to ask you, just to get started for us this morning, tell us what stories are and why they're important.
Well, that's a large question. stories are important because they are so fundamental to the way that we interact with the world. We tend to identify with like the heroes and the characters and stories that we see. They're in movies or in books or whatever, because it's like, oh yeah, that's a relatable thing. That reminds me of my own experience, and that kind of can help me navigate my own experience. So I can say, oh yeah, Bilbo was able to do this. So I can do that. I can make these difficult choices and step out of my comfort zone sometimes when life requires that of us. And so stories themselves help us navigate that that kind of thing. And as for what a story is, I mean, there's a lot of definitions. My personal favorite is that a story kind of follows a structure. So there is the idea of the hero's journey, where a character starts somewhere, they receive a call to adventure, and then they have to go through various trials and difficulties, kind of then reaching a point where they have to die to themselves or make some sort of sacrifice. And then once they make that sacrifice, they come out the other side a changed, improved version of the character that they started with. And then kind of come back around that circle, that cycle, to where they are in a new sense of normal, where they can kind of then start over, and that repeats itself. And that's obviously a structure you see all over the, you know, everywhere from obviously the Bible to nature, in that you get the seasons and the kind of cycle of death and return. In our own lives, that is something that comes up a lot. So.
Sure. So tell me a little bit more about the call to adventure, and how does that manifest itself in stories, and why is that important? Because the rest of it makes sense to me. It's all great, but that call to adventure seems to be the one thing that kind of sticks out.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the call to adventure is kind of the most important part of the story, in that if you don't have it, you don't have a story.
Okay.
Like, to go back to Bilbo, if Gandalf and the dwarves never show up, The Hobbit is just the autobiography of a, like, fat hobbit in a hole. Yeah. Like, it's not interesting as a story at all. And so that call to adventure is kind of the intrusion of something outside the hero's circumstances that makes them realize there's a larger world out here, and I should participate in it.
Sure.
Yeah, so in my my favorite story, The Princess Bride.
Okay, yeah.
You get, like, life's just kind of normal, and, like, Buttercup, the princess, is just kind of like, you know, life, I mean, Wesley's dead, but, mm-hmm. like, life's fine. Mm-hmm. And then the three Sicilian crowd, like, mm-hmm. they come in and kidnap her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a call to Avenger, because it takes her out of where she is and puts her in a new situation where she kind of has to do new things. And, you know, it's less a call and more of a kidnapping.
Sure.
But it is still the event in the story that moves her into the adventure stage.
Right. So the call to adventure can be anything. Because when I hear call to adventure, I think of, I think of, like, the Batman light in the sky.
Okay.
Or you know, like, whatever, like Lois Lane coming up to Clark Kent and saying something horrible has happened.
Right.
Like, that's what I thought of. So, but you're saying that the call to adventure can be
pretty much anything.
Any life circumstance
at all. Anything that takes us out of where we are right now and moves us into kind of that next phase.
Okay.
So in our lives, for instance, that could be, you know, hey, you just got a new job, or here's a promotion, or you got fired, or, you know, you're going to have a baby, or anything like that, where all of a sudden where you are now is changing.
Okay.
And you have to, the way that you approach life is going to be different because of that change.
Sure.
And it might require some difficult, you know, sacrifices to be made, or you kind of have to go through those trials as you navigate what is the new normal going to look like after this event. And that's a cycle that, you know, like I said, because it's a cycle, it can repeat itself.
Sure.
So you can have that, you know, as you kind of grow up, that happens a lot. You go through high school and college and kind of, you know, that first few years of adulthood.
Right.
And that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
And then
it
can still continue to happen after that as changes happen where, okay, I'm not where I was before. How do I navigate that change into somewhere new?
So can I understand the call to adventure as any sort of threshold moment where you're transitioning from one place to another, or the anthropologists call it the liminal space, where you're thrown from your normal into a completely different situation, and then you can learn something or draw from something. So I'm thinking, like, psychologically and maybe even, like, sociologically, why do you think that stories took that shape of being? Do you think it's because there's this that everyone experiences those sorts of threshold moments, those sorts of, like, necessary suffering is maybe the word that I would use, and so throughout all life, always people were dying. The animals were killing humans, you know, humans were hunting animals, right? Like all throughout, always, that was going on. So do you think that's why stories took shape, to kind of help us cope with some of those changes?
I think there's an element of that, definitely. Joseph Campbell, in his book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces, which is kind of the seminal work on the subject of the hero's journey and that, talks a lot about kind of shared human experience and references a lot of different cultures, kind of traditions and stories from across the world, different times, that kind of say, here's this common thread that keeps popping up. I think there's also an element when you ask, like, well, why do all humans experience the same things? And there's kind of, my personal take on that would be that there is a place where we are all kind of experiencing shadows and echoes of real truth. So what God or I think, like, the book of Hebrews, where it talks about, like, these things are shadows of things to come. Like, this temple that was made here on earth is a type of the temple that will be to come. And that there are, like, things that are realer than the things that we experience going on.
Okay.
So C.S. Lewis's book, The Great Divorce, is kind of about that idea that you get to heaven, that's realer than you are, you can't even imagine, and the goal is to be transformed into that image.
Right.
And so I think that there is an element of that going on, too, where humans are all experiencing the same thing. And they're kind of saying, I see this common structure. I'm mm-hmm. telling these stories because I can relate to them.
Sure.
And other people can relate to them. But the reason we can all relate to them is that, you know, they are mirrored images and kind of shadowed images of kind of the cosmic story of God.
Sure.
And what he has done.
Yeah.
In Earth and is doing.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Earth. And so I'm trying to think, because, I mean, so Joseph Campbell's Heroes of a Thousand Faces, it takes this shape, story, start, the call to adventure, there's the difficulties, mm-hmm. the sacrifice, then the change.
Yeah.
Or the improved hero, yeah. and then the new normal. That's the shape that he uses.
Yeah, and he adds, I think he's got, 20 or so different, mini stages in each of those parts. Basically, there are three parts. There's, the call to adventure, there is the trials, and then there is the return.
The return,
so those are kind of the three main ones, but you can break those up kind of however you want.
Right,
and
right.
Some people, I've seen them, some people take it there's eight versions, there's 20. It's it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The point is that it's kind of this cycle.
Sure. And I think, I can pretty easily, and I think that for someone who has a biblical imagination, it's pretty easy to see that being the cycle of, mm-hmm. the Paschal mystery of Christ, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. I think that we can kind of see that we can see the story and how that echoes what Christ did. But I mean, I'm sure that Joseph Campbell, and I know that I've seen it, the stories even pre-Christ.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's tease out, what is it fundamentally about God that makes us want, or that we see this structure in life, and also we want to tell these stories?
Okay.
What do you think it is about God
that is
impressed on us?
I am reminded of the verse in Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
That says God has put eternity in the hearts of man,
mm-hmm.
so that they won't know, that it depends on the translation, but so that they won't know the sum of things, under the sun or whatever. And so I think that's kind of a key to that inside every human, whether they acknowledge it or not, there is kind of this longing for that.
Mm-hmm.
Something more.
Sure.
I'm not quite satisfied here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what the hero's journey, that cycle of story is I'm not satisfied here because I've received this call to adventure.
Okay.
I go through this structure and I come out the other side changed and more,
mm-hmm.
More satisfied. But again, because these string together, then the hero is well, I'm not satisfied here either. And I'm not satisfied here either. It's like the classic, how many sequels can you get out of one movie? Because they just kind of keep, that cycle keeps repeating itself, and usually with diminishing returns as it continues. But
especially if you're Marvel, right?
Especially if you're Marvel, or really any movie franchise
in the last
20 years or whatever. Yeah, so I think that kind of, that longing for something more.
Okay.
Is itself a call to adventure.
Yeah.
And it's God's invitation to say, hey, come seek me, or come, don't be satisfied here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think because that is a shared experience among every human, and again, some people maybe acknowledge it more than others, or mm-hmm. some people, are just kind of like, nope, I'm forgetting it. I'm fine here.
Yeah.
Leave me alone in my hobbit hole.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still present there to some extent, I think.
Yeah, so do you think that, I'm going to ask you a huge general question.
Okay, my favorite.
Yeah, so do you think that in general, when a story, so let's say, maybe we can talk about The Hobbit.
Okay.
But see, that's not even, because I'm trying to think through what the desire is of the hero.
Okay.
In a hero's journey.
Okay.
Is the desire to go back to the normal? Is the desire to? I mean, so what compels the hero,
right,
to move on? Right. If there is a general one, and I guess my question more is the whatever this desire is, maybe mm-hmm. for Bilbo, it was to get back home.
Yeah.
Or
Odysseus trying to get
back
home.
Right, to get back home. That's huge. So is that is that desire a shadow of ultimately this desire to this desire for eternity, this desire for God that we don't realize, like, are all these little mini stories in these mini desires kind of, mm-hmm. do they fit into that bigger kind of grand?
I think they definitely, I think most of them do.
Okay.
You know, there's that longing to be home again. That's definitely like a big mm-hmm. one that you see, you know, throughout stories. I think even in the Princess Bride, the other kind of hero's dream yeah. that's going on there, Wesley, yeah. is like, I love this woman.
Yeah.
I'm going to go somewhere so that I can come back mm-hmm. and we can be together.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I mean, even kind of in the...
Is Buttercup the hero of The Princess Bride?
I think you can make a case that at least like five different characters okay. are the hero. I think it's right. very interesting in that regard. That
there's a lot of storylines that yeah, interplay together.
Yeah, and that's why I love it so much, is because yeah. it's so complex. Like, there's, you get like Inigo in there yeah. and Fezzik and Buttercup and Wesley, yeah. but that's kind of a tangent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, sorry. So keep anyway, going.
But that idea that I'm going to go somewhere so I can come back and things will be better when I come back.
Okay.
Even in like the idea of Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave where I am
right.
here by the Father and yeah. come here for a while, go through a lot of unpleasant things mm-hmm. so that when I come back, things will be better.
Sure.
That's the idea of like redemption
yeah.
and resurrection.
Yeah.
Is that when I come out the other side of this, things mm-hmm. are better. And so in stories, that can take a lot of different shapes, I think. Sometimes it's just like, the classic is like, there's a damsel in distress somewhere,
yeah.
and you've got to go save her. But kind of the motivation is, generally, I want the place I am now to be better. It's not quite good enough,
okay.
or something is threatening it, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe there's, like in The Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. maybe there is this force that's
right.
going to wipe out this normal.
Yeah.
And so we have to go stop it so that we can come back to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that kind of return at the end is one of the ways that stories can differ.
Okay.
So sometimes you can just come back and it can be happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then sometimes you can't really come back.
Right.
So like The Lord of the Rings is
right.
a classic
yeah.
example
yeah.
of that. That
Frodo can't, he can't stay in the Shire.
Right.
He can't go back, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so that return can take a few different shapes. Sometimes
okay.
the trials and the journey changes you so much that while they accomplish the goal of doing whatever they set out to do,
mm-hmm.
the hero can't really come back. They've kind of transcended that
mm-hmm.
that normalcy that they knew before.
I want to jump back and see if we can tease this out.
Okay.
To what is it about God that creates the cycle?
Gotcha.
Because like I'm trying to figure out, is there something, is this sort of mystery, this mysterious pattern.
Okay.
Is it naturally a part of God, or is it because of, well, I guess because of the fall, that we understand that there was a broken normal that
mm-hmm.
kind of causes us to tell
mm-hmm.
these stories. So what do you think about?
Well, so I think that idea of the like final redemption of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So Christ comes back
mm-hmm.
and everything is made right is kind of that like ultimate like end goal that motivates or that is
okay.
waiting for the hero at the end of the story.
Okay.
So if you consider like all of history, everything that's happened, you know, it's kind of like God creates, then there's a fall, there's a redemption,
right.
and then there's the recreation.
Right.
Like things are finally made right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, like that's ultimately what we're longing for when we long for eternity
okay.
is that sense of like that justice and that peace and
mm-hmm.
that this is the way things are meant to be, that
right.
return to, because we recognize the world around us is not that
yeah.
in
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
any sense.
Yeah. So you think it's primarily this want, this desire to for recreation. So Genesis chapter 3, this is after the fall. The Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed above all livestock, jump down. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. And so we have this idea after the fall that there's going to be this offspring of Eve, this offspring of humans that will finally crush the serpent's head, is how it's translated in some. So bruise the head, squash it, but will also be bitten.
Right.
The heel will also be bitten by, which reading that from like a post-Christ, right, for the Christian, you know, from a Christian view, we can say, oh yeah, that's obviously Jesus, because he did ultimately defeat sin, but he was also killed. But that does seem like the pattern of story, of ultimately what makes that hero a hero, is that they've crushed whatever proverbial serpent that they're trying to overcome, but they're also damaged. They're also, they're damaged goods, because they have this, their heel is struck.
Or they've literally died, which is, you know,
they've literally died.
That's such a cliche in, you know, in stories where you see, oh, the hero dies, but is he really dead?
Yeah.
Oh, he's not, he's coming back. Know, as a kid, like my favorite movie was Mighty Joe Young.
Okay.
And so there's a scene where Mighty Joe Young is like proving that he's like a, you know, he's not a monster, and he comes up and saves the kid on the Ferris wheel, but the Ferris wheel tips over and he's dead, and he's laying there, and Charlize Theron is like crying.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh no, he's died. He made the ultimate sacrifice. Oh no, he's not dead. He came back.
Right,
He's just asleep. Like,
Or, so do you think a story's better if the... If a hero just stays dead when
they die? I think there's something nice about that, right? Where at least it's not... I mean, there's nothing nice about death, but there's some...
But it seems more honest, though.
Right, it does. Because, like, when people die in real life, they don't come back, at least on this side of things.
Right?
We don't get to see them, you know, alive here again.
Right.
And so that... To just have, like, the hero come back feels like it's stopping just short of... What's really
of being honest?
Yeah, because in the total, like, grand cosmic story, yes, if you die here, Jesus dies, he comes back, like, we can participate in that and come back in that resurrection, but we don't get to see that on our side of things,
right?
We're kind of living in the, if that cycle is like a circle, there's like a light half, and then there's like a dark half where all like the trials are. And so we're kind of stuck down here in those trials, and like we're hoping, like looking forward to the one day when we cross over into that light side of the cycle.
So we're on that shadow side, the Ecclesiastes.
Yes.
Vanity, all is vanity.
Yes.
So we're on that. As humans, we're on that side.
Yeah, and like the phrase that appears in Ecclesiastes like all the time, under the sun.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing new under the sun. Everything is vanity under the sun. And it's like... That's that dark side. It's like, while we are here on this earth, all of this is true.
Yeah.
But you look, you know, to, I know you've been thinking about, like, Ecclesiastes and Job and kind of those tying together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to Job where he's in, like, that dark part of his life. And then God comes in, and there's kind of that, whoa, there's something else here I didn't even, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
There's that, again, that longing for eternity, that kind of glint of like, oh, there's something more here that I don't understand, that I can't understand because I'm down here. I'm still going through these trials.
Right.
And things are not perfect yet.
Right.
But one day we come out the other side.
Yeah. So you're saying, I think that I'm understanding what you're saying. So ultimately, it's because of the fall that we have to, well, that it's because of the fall that God has to redeem humanity.
Yeah.
And he started it back here in Genesis 3, where he says there'll be enmity between the serpent and the woman, between the woman's offspring. The offspring will crush the head and the serpent will bite the heel. And so ultimately that's kind of the seed of that hope for redemption from the third page of the Bible. God says it's going to be fixed, but we feel the bite, but we haven't quite completely crushed the head
and
yet.
And it's not going to be easy, because, you know, you look at what he says to Adam and Eve.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is going to suck.
Yeah, like, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Things are not going to be easy.
Right.
But they are going to be worth it because of that promise of one day.
Yeah, things will be fixed.
Yes.
It will come back. So I like that idea of the circle cut in half, top half is light, bottom half. And does that kind of represent the normal, the top half?
Okay. Yeah, so the top half is where the hero would start in kind of the hero cycle. Mm-hmm. And that threshold, that call to adventure, they enter the dark and then kind of come out the other side.
Yeah. And humanity, you would say, is kind of, we're on that shadow side. Where, and I think that Gungor, well, they have an album called Ghost Upon the Earth, and they say we're moving around like ghosts, that's kind of based off of the Great Divorce that you mentioned earlier, that like we're just kind of seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul says through a foggy mirror, or, you know, we're just kind of like, we can't really see things. So ultimately, these stories that we tell offer us hope.
Yeah.
And they offer us a little foretaste of the ultimate redemption that God has implanted in us. So that makes sense from a Christian perspective. So could you help me understand why is there from like an anthropological point of view that removes God from the picture?
Okay.
It's kind of a humanist anthropological point of view. What is the purpose of story, right? Joseph Campbell isn't a Christian writer.
No.
So what's the purpose of story for him, and why does he think that we tell those stories?
So he's writing this book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces, kind of in the midst of like the psychoanalysis, like the Freud and Jung, and
kind of
in these, you know, the human subconscious and like, you know, that everything stems from like our infantile fantasies of like father and mother.
Oh, okay.
And so that kind of thing. And so he tends to, he also ties it in very much to like Buddhism and that idea that like everything is kind of, because we're like all babies, like, and we, it gets weird. And there's like some parts I really like, oh, that's really good. And there's some points I'm like, I can't understand this.
Yeah.
But I think his perspective on it would be kind of the shared experiences that every human goes through are kind of the source of this.
Okay.
So that like as a child, everything, because it's based on Freud, goes back to your father and your mother.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it's like as a child, you're like close with your mother, and there's like that sense of that bond, and then like as you grow up, you grow away and you grow closer to your father, and there's kind of that, you know, everyone's kind of longing for their father's approval.
Okay.
And they kind of want something, they want their father to say, hey, you did a good job. They want their father to approve of them. And so then their life is kind of spent chasing that, and then they kind of come back to that when they become parents, or when you kind of go through that cycle of like, now they are again that kind of closer to that nurturing, which I don't totally buy into.
Right.
Like,
right.
I think there's something there. Right. I think definitely we are all longing for the approval of our father.
Right.
If only because God is our father.
Right, right.
And like, there's certainly something there.
Yeah.
I mean, what I have read on this that isn't kind of based on a Christian worldview, it's very much about kind of that shared human experience that we like these stories because we relate to these stories and that we, our life is kind of based around this idea of a cycle and the miniature cycles within that, which to me, you could stop there and say, yep, all humans go through this. It's much more interesting to ask, well, why do all humans go through this?
Yeah.
What's going on behind the scenes of that? Which you can answer a few different ways. You know, you can use the Christian kind of answer that we've talked about here. You can go into the Buddhist idea of just kind of like transcending this and that.
But it still sounds like Joseph Campbell recognizes, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know anything about him, but it sounds like he recognizes there's some sort of transcendent reality.
Right.
Like, just the fact that every human everywhere across every culture shares this same pattern. And the thing is that I don't think that it can be explained away through nature. Maybe through ecology, but certainly not through animal behavior. That, because there's never any redemption in animal behavior.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, well, you know, we try to say the circle of life, but really it's just things die.
Right.
You know, there's mass extinctions. There's, mm-hmm. you know, there's fires that just consume everything. There are predators yeah. that just eat prey. And it's like, and so I think that maybe from ecology, from the four seasons, we can see this idea of rebirth. But I can't really see how this story could be drawn just from
okay.
the garden, you know, or right. and I mean like the not the Garden of Eden, but like a physical garden,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Humans gardening. I don't quite see how this story could be mm-hmm. drawn from that. I don't know.
Well, I think you could make the argument maybe that, so, you know, you look at like the food chain, for instance.
Right.
You know, you get the smallest things get eaten by the bigger things, mm-hmm. get eaten by the bigger things, until you get something that's not being eaten by anything.
Right.
Until it like dies.
Right.
And then, you know, like
the maggots eat it.
There's maggots and there's like yeah. small little bug things that eat it, which then get eaten by,
yeah.
you know. And so there's kind of that, but it's more just like, oh, it's just a cycle. It's not really redemption. There's not
right.
really that, okay, things are back, like they're right.
right.
It's just like, oh, it's just kind of this self-perpetuating chain
right.
of
right.
events
that yeah.
are largely meaningless.
Right, right.
And that really, that search for meaning is so key
right,
to
right.
what's going on there.
So it's kind of because I think that the circle, that circle of life, that cyclical nature of well, this, of nature, is that's very, you know, the writer of Ecclesiastes, that's like, that's what he's really dealing with.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, eventually the lion that has no natural prey dies and it gets eaten by the smallest, you know, it gets eaten by a bug, right? Like,
yeah.
like that's like humiliating for, you know, for the lion. And it does create that, but it's never ending, right? So
yeah.
that there is no redemption there. It's just this never ending cycle of constant death, constant death, constant
Which
death, constant death.
And sounds exhausting.
Sounds exhausting. That's exactly right. And so, so that's really what the writers of Ecclesiastes is getting at. But then we have the book of Job that introduces us to the wisdom of God, and he calls it the Hebrew word is chokmah, and Job experiences this suffering, he experiences these trials, and you brought Job up earlier, and he experiences all these horrible things. What seems to be what a humanist could look at and just say, hey man, that just happens, right? Like
yeah.
people get sick, kids die
all at once,
all that yeah.
terrible tragedy.
And Job really experiences the depths of that. Like he is the lion that's getting picked away by a maggot, right? Like it is like he is humiliated, he is beat down, and at one point, and I think that this is a natural conclusion of that kind of like, you know, this kind of like atheism, you know, nihilism, whatever, that like nothing is, there's no meaning.
Yeah.
Is that he just, I mean, he never curses God, but he kind of accuses God of not running the world well. And he says, hey, you know, you don't, you know, what's going on? You're, you know, whatever, you're irresponsible is essentially what he's arguing. And God comes in just in the, you know, chapters 38 to 42 of Job, he just comes in and just like drops a hammer. And he says, hey, did you tell the ocean where to stop?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, you know, make the trees grow? And he essentially walks Job through, well, one way that I've heard it told really well is almost like a family photo album. I'm just like showing Job, hey, I've been around a lot longer than you have. I existed before you were around. And from your point of view, you're upset, but you don't have my
yeah.
you don't have my point of view. He talks about Leviathan, which was this like this sea dragon that you know, it was mythical, you know, and so it had like seven heads or something like that. Isaiah talks about it, and it's mm-hmm. probably what John is referring to even in the Revelation. But it's like this seven-headed dragon that represents chaos and disorder, which would make sense for somebody who's just suffering
yeah.
so much chaos. And God essentially says, do you fish for the Leviathan? Can you catch it on a hook and reel it in? Can you tie it up and lead it on like a child, you know, on a leash?
Mm-hmm.
And so he essentially says, I'm so much greater than you. My wisdom is so much higher than yours. And from your perspective, you can be angry, but you don't have my perspective.
Yeah.
And so I think that from a nihilist point of view, Job is right. Job comes to this point where he's like, hey, God has, he's being ornery, he's being, you know, disorderly, he's not running things well, but God says, hey, there's more than you know. And I feel like that's kind of the seed that, you know, to go all the way back to Genesis 3, when you squash the serpent's heel, it bites, or you squash the serpent's head and the serpent bites the heel. There's this necessary suffering. And then Christ, of course, fulfills that. Mm-hmm. There's this necessary suffering that we all have to go through. But God says, hey, the serpent's heel is going to be crushed. And the chokmah, the wisdom of Job, is, I know more than you. And then eventually that's fulfilled
right.
in Christ, where everything is redeemed. We can exist in that reality now. So we do kind of have that cycle unfolding of
yeah.
all throughout Scripture. We have this idea of there's this suffering and then there's a redemption,
yeah.
which kind of sounds like the two main movements of mm-hmm. the hero's journey.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, you can also, if you take that nihilistic kind of everything is meaningless approach to stories, it's just like, well, you get to the end of the story, and it's just another story right. after that, and there's another Marvel right. sequel, and there's yeah. another sequel. And yeah. it's just like, this is never going to end. And it's very unsatisfactory.
Right. Which is why Atlas Shrugged is like the worst book ever written.
Right? It's so bad. It's so bad. But yeah, you see that throughout kind of the idea of Marxism is huh. that here are two opposing viewpoints. They're going to come together and create a new mm-hmm. New viewpoint. There's going to be an opposing viewpoint, and then they're going to come together and create a new viewpoint. And it's just the idea of the dialectic, that two things come together, make a new thing.
Yeah.
Something opposes it, makes a new thing.
Sure.
Those two things. And so there's no end, though,
yeah.
because any hypothesis that is reached is just the first thesis mm-hmm. that an antithesis comes up to.
Right.
And that's, if that's your understanding of kind of your worldview, and that's how you approach stories, there's not a whole lot of hope there. There's right. not, it's just kind of, all of it is focused on an immediate kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The idea when Joseph Campbell talks about the two genres of tragedy and comedy.
Okay.
He talks about tragedy as kind of the ultimately more resonant, more meaningful one. Mm. Because he's like, that's the way the world is. It's right. tragic. Things tend toward disorder, entropy, things fall apart, everyone dies.
Mm-hmm.
And comedy is just kind of like this, well, there can be a brief moment of comedy or of joy mm. or of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But the myth of happily ever after is not something that is truly resonant.
Oh.
And I look at that and say, no.
Right, right.
There's this even larger cycle of what would be called comedy, but is really that happy ending
yeah.
that all is right with the world that's going on even above and beyond the tragedy that we see here.
Right.
Because that tragedy is under the sun.
Right.
That's just down here on this bottom half of the circle.
Right, right.
But ultimately, there is that happy ending. There is that eternity.
Right, right.
That depending on your viewpoint, it's either going to be really depressing
yeah.
when you look at stories, or it's going to be, no, this isn't, this gives hope.
Right, right. The tragedy may elicit more of an emotional response, because people feel their pain.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that people feel pain more than they feel redemption in most people's lives right now.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's the more emotionally resonant, but I think that everybody longs for the happy ending. I also think that it's important that it's not, okay, I'm going to dog on Marvel movies more, but which is one of my favorite things to do, but it's not because, like, you know, so the superhero genre right now, at least in movies, is one where it's character, there's a character, whatever, Captain America, Iron Man, well, maybe Iron Man actually has a decent story arc for his character, but essentially it's, you know, Captain America, Wolverine, whatever it is, and then there's a problem that needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And then they fix that problem, and usually it's some bad guy, and we joked about this the other day, that it's like, it's always, the next movie has to be a bigger bad guy, until pretty soon they're just going to be like fighting God himself, you know, they're not going to be, but there's a problem to be fixed, there's a threat to be fixed, they fix it, and then they are unchanged,
relatively
unchanged from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. Yeah. And they just recycle that over and over and over again.
And that's what audiences want, right? Like, that's why they go see these movies, is I want this character. I want this cool character to just do cool things.
Yeah.
It's like everyone loves to, in sports, which I'm not a huge sports guy, but like you root for the underdog, right? Because there might be a story there, right? Yeah. Of like, these guys came out of nothing and they pulled it off.
Yeah.
No one roots for like the, you know, undefeated, like, we're just going to crush these guys.
And that's why people like March Madness so much.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it is maybe the one sport that like the nobody can really make it pretty far. And it's exciting to watch that story arc of them. Even if they don't make it all the way, it still is like really satisfying to see this this low seated person, or maybe they were completely unseated before, and then they just like come through and they get two or three rounds in, and that's a really exciting thing. Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the story structure, right? Of we root for the underdog. We root for someone who has experienced that. If you don't go that route, and if you're instead doing kind of that Marvel thing of, here's a character, they do some stuff, and we repeat that.
Yeah.
How you have to make that satisfying for audiences or for your the people that you're telling your stories to is you have to escalate things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So first, Captain America is going to fight. This just kind of guy, he's kind of on his level. It's just, you know, whatever. But then he's going to fight someone who's really a threat.
Yeah.
And then someone who's even more of a threat. And eventually, you run out of people who are in escalation.
Right. Like and then they have to fight each other.
Yeah.
Right? Which is exactly what happened.
And then it's like, then he really has to fight himself because he's his own worst enemy. And it's like, at some point, you run out of stories to tell there because you're not really telling stories.
Right.
You're just, it's like a kid who's like, you know, telling you a story and they're like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And it's like, there's no closure. There's no, this is the finale. This is, we've learned something. We've done something because you're just, here's the next exciting thing. Oh, and there's something else more exciting happened. And then something more exciting.
Sure.
Which is, I've heard that talked about as the idea of the American monomyth.
Oh, interesting.
So the idea that a cowboy rides into a town, does whatever he needs to do, and then rides off into the sunset.
Right.
And the cowboy doesn't change.
Unchanged, right.
Mm-hmm. He can't form attachments. He's someone from outside of the world.
Yeah.
He can't, you know, and change.
And we love it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, first of all, I should say that I love John Wayne movies, but that's like every John Wayne movie, right? And he is the same character in every John Wayne movie, just with a different name.
Yeah.
And
there is something satisfying about that, you know, just kind of that watching the guy come in and just take care of business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know he's going to win.
Yeah.
But it's not really – stories can happen around that.
Right.
So I think sometimes in like those Westerns or those kind of classic movies, the more interesting story is what's happening around John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the side characters who have kind of these things that they're going through.
Right.
Or, you know – like the townsfolk and what's going on there, or these B plots can have very compelling stories, but that the actual kind of A storyline of, you know, the cowboy comes in or the superhero or whoever the hero is, that's just kind of allowing these other stories to happen.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting twist on the idea of story that
our
main character is not actually the character that
he's the main character is almost more of like a force of nature.
Yes.
Than a character.
And you could maybe interpret that when the main character comes into town, he's the call to adventure
for
everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that like John Wayne rides in and, you know, he starts changing things and doing stuff, and all of a sudden, those townspeople are taken out of where they were mm-hmm. and are thrust into this adventure.
Yeah.
Sometimes against their will, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, because they have a need that John Wayne can meet or whatever.
Yeah.
And then John Wayne moves on, the cowboy moves on, and those people have changed. Like, sure. their life is different. The bad guys are gone, or the right. town is, right. you know, saved, or whatever yeah. is going on.
That's interesting. Oh, man. Okay, so and that is a really, I hadn't thought of that, but it makes sense. Because our superhero movies are westerns,
yeah.
They're that same exact same way, which I hadn't thought of. Which of course goes back even to the, you know, the Penny Dreadful novels. Mm-hmm. You know that were sold during the late 19th century. You know, so that's been a myth,
yeah,
for a long time in the States. And I don't know if that's the case also. In Canada, but maybe we can just say North America, right?
Sure. Like
that's been the the myth for North America for a long time. But I guess then this is gonna be a fun rabbit trail.
Okay. I love rabbit trails.
So let's then talk about Jesus, the Jesus figure.
Okay.
In the Gospels, who is almost the same way. Experiences these. No, I would argue that he struggles more than most cowboys and westerns are. You know, like yeah. the struggle that he has is deeper, but relatively unchanged.
Yeah, he's still God.
He's still God. At the end of it. He's still God, and he still has the wisdom. So we see a Jesus who, at least from a human point of view, is relatively unchanged from his call, which is the baptism,
yeah.
you know, and the voice of the Father coming.
Yeah.
That's probably what you could call the call, because then he's driven into the wilderness right away to experience struggles.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this Jesus that's relatively unchanged, and you mentioned that it's really, that in those instances, like in the Westerns, that it's the B-plots
mm-hmm.
that are more interesting, which I think that we can see with the 12 disciples.
Yeah.
That when it comes to the human story, those are much more compelling stories that the gospel writers are telling.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Yeah, so like you look at Peter,
yeah,
right?
He's a perfect example.
There is a lot of very compelling story.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter has a journey, right? Like he starts out as, you know, this kind of rough guy, but Jesus really likes him, and he seems to be getting along, but he has his ups and downs.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's like, Jesus, you are the Son of God. Okay, get behind me, Satan.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You're, mm-hmm. And then kind of goes through that darkness of denying Jesus and realizing, kind of has to use the hero's journey motif, he has to die to himself and realize that he's not, he has to, you know, he's not as good as he thought he was.
Right.
But then there is that redemption mm-hmm. where Jesus kind of allows him to come back and welcomes him back. And then you look at his, you know, throughout Acts and that, how he continues to kind of have this unfolding of,
because he still makes mistakes even in Acts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's that hope of redemption that what's going on there. There's so many great kind of human characters that follow Jesus
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't get like the whole story on some of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you look at like someone like Pontius Pilate. Like the scene mm-hmm. we get with Pontius Pilate is a very compelling scene.
Yeah, especially in John. That's a very compelling story.
And it hints at like, wow, that, you know, someone should make a movie of that. Someone probably shouldn't make a movie of it, because movies based on the Bible tend to be pretty bad most of the time. But here's this scene, or think of like Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone who literally goes to, and we don't get like the first half of that. We don't get to know Lazarus before he's dead.
Right.
We don't get to that character develop, but then like he dies and comes back to life, and any of the people that Jesus heals kind of have like, this is a life-changing event that has happened. Their story is different because Jesus interacted with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you take that then out of just the Gospels and take that into our lives as followers of Jesus,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
my story is better.
Right.
Because of Jesus' involvement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Jesus came in and because I interacted with that.
Right.
You know, it kind of radically changed the course of,
sure,
you know.
Sure, of your life. So I guess the Christ gives us the monomyth of redemption.
Yeah.
But, oh yeah, because he actually doesn't, he doesn't need that. He doesn't need the story, but he takes it on. He takes on the struggles and he takes on the call in order to bring redemption for us. And so I guess, like, that's really interesting because I hadn't thought of that. I mean, like, John Wayne's like Jesus in that. No. But I guess in this story, we would call it the call to adventure.
Yeah.
In the Bible, we call it Jesus, right? This, like, that there's this force, this, well, I mean, Jesus isn't a force, he's a person, right? But there's this event, this mm-hmm. person that happens that compels us to move beyond what we know and to mm-hmm. take part in something bigger, mm-hmm. which is exactly what God's call on each of our lives is that he gives us hints of there's something more. He has placed eternity, just like you mentioned earlier. He places mm-hmm. eternity in everybody's heart. But in the gospel stories, it's Jesus. The human story is the disciples,
mm-hmm.
but Jesus is operating on this different level of teaching and interacting and being the call, and then finishes it for people through his death and resurrection.
Yeah, he is, you know, the firstborn of many many sons and daughters, right? That he allows the people around him to kind of participate in that cycle of, mm-hmm. you know, because there's no redemption without Jesus, right?
Right?
There's no mm-hmm. satisfactory conclusion to this story unless Jesus comes and does it. And you're right, you know, when you say he doesn't need to, you know, he doesn't mm-hmm. need that, mm-hmm. but he voluntarily takes that on for the people around him mm-hmm. and for us, you know, really all of humanity.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show. Be sure to check out Daniel Hintz's podcast at ascribepodcast.wordpress.com. We appreciate you guys tuning in to our episode. Special thanks to No Copyright Sounds. You can find them at SoundCloud for their use of the song Disfigure. Have a good day and have a blessed weekend. Bye-bye.